Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. Well, I forgot on Friday to announce that we were doing a different schedule this week. So I forgot it was Thanksgiving on that day. I announced it, so I apologize for that. 914-338-0164 is the call number. Please press 1 if you'd like to speak with us. As always, we invite our callers and listeners to join us on Facebook and on Twitter. Those accounts are linked on our Blog Talk Radio profile, Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. And I'm trying to share this to our pages. Sadly, I posted, Sadly, I posted a nice video on our Facebook pages and our regular personal page. And it is Farm Sanctuary's, a video of Farm Sanctuary's annual Celebrate the Turkeys meal. They actually have a feast for rescued turkeys, turkeys that were rescued from slaughter every year. And so there's a video that I posted, and there's commentary from different individuals involved in the Farm Sanctuary company. This is a company, not a company, organization, I should say, that we donate to. And they actually have a Farm Sanctuary location a few hours away from us in Acton, California. It's unfortunate we can't visit. I think normally they have guests at this event, but because of the whole COVID shutdown, there's no guests invited this year, people, aside from the people that are working the event. But no one responded to our post.
Not one person.
Shocking. Because, you know, the request was for people to make a pledge to not eat turkey this Thanksgiving, to go vegetarian. We're still trying to figure out what we're doing here because we've had some severe shutdowns. In fact, in Southern California on Wednesday, they're now banning outdoor dining. So that is going to be a big hit to the restaurants. I'm sure most restaurants are going to be closed on the holiday because of it. Restaurants that plan to be opened. And then on Saturday, they're banning breathing.
Breathing, yeah.
They're putting, so, and that will be in effect for at least 3 weeks, just like the ban on dining outdoors.
And then January 1st, they're banning having a human body.
Yeah.
So we're on a downward spiral here.
Anyway.
No, you know.
No one commented. I was shocked. Not one person on our pages and our homepage, which is our, like, friend, you know, our personal profile, where we have over 4,000 friends.
Not one person out of 4,000.
Not one person out of 4,000. You would think that there would be at least some supporting vegetarians. I don't know. Sometimes your what gets posted to your feed gets, there's problems with it being in the feed and visible to all of your friends. I know that's not happened sometimes, so that could possibly have been why, but I was pretty surprised.
Well, there are some people who could care less about turkeys. They just feel like you know, they're kind of stupid birds in this tradition.
They're not stupid birds.
They're actually very affectionate. They're intelligent. They have a social group.
They have a language.
They have a language. These are living creatures. Anyways, you're either on the side that you don't eat animals, or you're in the middle and you love animals, but you also eat them. And then the other side.
Yeah, which is an interesting place to be. I mean, because a lot of people who are pet owners are omnivores. So you can be an animal lover and still eat meat. I've been a meat eater and a non-meat eater throughout my life. I mean, since I was raised as a meat eater with meat in my diet. So I didn't really have the opportunity to, before the age of 18, stop eating meat. But I think my first foray into vegetarianism was at 19 years old. I became a vegetarian. So fairly early on, after being of the age where I could make that decision.
You know, it's
because
it's interesting. This writer, Jan Morris, she was a celebrated journalist and historian and fiction writer. She just recently died at 94, and the great travel writer. She was born a man, and even at the age of four, she knew she should be a woman. She started praying to God that she could change her body even at the age of four. She died when she was 94. But she knew at four that she was a woman or was in the wrong body. I recall at the age of four or five, maybe, that I had to become a vegetarian. And back in those days, they had little supermarkets. Loma Linda was about the only product you could find. But I was conscious about it at four or five. I had a deep love for animals and all forms of animal, the animal kingdom, insects included, fishes. But I've always had that love. And that might have prompted me to become a vegetarian at that age because I was already there. But what happened when I was a kid was I started communicating with animals. I had a dog for 17 years that I talked.
Did like and English could, talk yeah. to you, I mean, when he learned English.
Gorilla Coco, what's her name, Henderson?
Francine, something. Anyway,
spoke. We had a communication, and she talked to me about it because it was disturbing.
And she was so disturbed. She told you never to come.
To weld it. Yeah. Coco wanted to mate with me, and she was observing Coco's behavior, and she had never seen it happen before, and she didn't know if I was doing mental telepathy. She had to drag me into her office and.
Francine.
Pulled out of me that I was a psychic talking
Francine
to her.
Francine Patterson.
Yeah. And but from there, I got letters from Coco and love letters, and she actually got a kitten afterward. Oh. But the point is that I can't, even insects, we save insects, by God, you know, spiders, bees. There is a communication, I think, with all forms of life. So, you know, even I get disturbed even when they put the bait on the hook, the little sardines, the little fish.
Worms?
We save worms.
No,
anyways.
You were talking about bait on a hook. You know, often bait is worm.
That was the old days. They use smelt or some kind of little fish.
Oh, well, I mean, in the days that I fished, which I was around fishing, unfortunately.
Yeah, very thin.
Which would made me absolutely, on one fishing trip, I became totally sick and I just couldn't do it again. I was like six. I was 6 years old then, five or six. I was disgusted with it.
Well,
I mean, I couldn't really identify what exactly was causing me to be so disturbed, but I was absolutely disturbed and I never participated in that again.
Well, you know, it It, and then we come up to this day when millions of turkeys are going to be slaughtered.
And obviously on any holiday, holidays, unfortunately, people eat meat throughout the year, but holidays are big meat eating celebrations. So whether it's turkeys on Thanksgiving, or it's ham, or prime rib on Christmas, or goose. I mean, some people do goose.
Yeah. Well, we support Defenders of Wildlife, the Wilderness, Sahara Club,
Sierra Club,
Animal Defenders, Humane Society, PETA, Farm Sanctuary, different foundations for animals. We do devote money to them and support their group. And we also do our part in trying to help wildlife wherever we can. And that's our process, and it's never going to change. It's been my world since I was 4 or 5. And the sacrifice of meat was nothing. It just, and today the products that are out there that are plant-based, they may have their own problems, but they're so advanced in their taste quality and texture quality, it's quite remarkable.
Right, and you don't have to necessarily even supplement with those products. There are legumes, beans. You don't necessarily need fake meat products, which are processed.
Yeah.
That's the downside to fake meat.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's a quick and easy way to, substitute rather than having to design a whole meal, cooking whole foods is going to be more time consuming than grabbing something out of the freezer that's a prepared food product
and
supplementing
it
with whole foods.
Any living thing that I'm eating or was a living thing. I totally respect Phoenix.
Plants are living things.
I know you got to stop somewhere. But yeah. The plants, I just put go online. It's okay on plants.
But you don't cut flowers.
I don't, no.
Yeah.
Anti-flower. No.
I mean, anti-cutting flowers.
No, I respect the trees and everything like that. It's just that's the whole common denominator. But like I was saying, I do highly respect Joaquin Phoenix, who brought such awareness to the farms and calves being torn from their mothers and the brutality that goes on the farms.
Yeah, and the dairy industry,
you can't
of course.
Watch it. I mean, if you're an animal lover, you can't even watch it.
You can be a vegetarian, but obviously the whole dairy factor is another layer to the story as far as
not just
being a vegetarian, but being a vegan because. What happens in the dairy farms is terrible, especially the commercial ones. Obviously, there are more humane dairy farms than others where the cows are treated better, but it still remains in question what actually happens in some of these farms that have won awards even about their humane treatment of cows and let them graze and everything.
And
freely.
I just read where this child CHALKOH, they make coconut milk.
Yeah.
They were using monkey labor. They take monkeys up in the wild and chain them up, abuse them horribly, and with a chain, train them to go collect coconuts. But it's extremely, the marquee monkeys, they are extremely abusive tactics there. Just as we have had with elephants and elephant rides, and elephants can find
makes
tight
me
spaces.
Sick. That makes me sick too. I remember being at a circus as a child. Also disgusted. I was like 3 years old. I hated it. Did not like. I was disturbed. I remember being disturbed. Probably I was about 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever went back to a circus after that. I was disturbed at the circus. Disturbed.
Yeah.
At that young age. And the fact, oh God, that we did that to elephants and what they do to elephants. I mean, then we talk about ecotourism and, you know, people go to India and Thailand and they ride elephants. People who participate in that should really educate themselves, because what they do to these elephants that are essentially enslaved into serving human beings for their stupid rides, and they're so abused.
Yeah.
They are treated terribly. They don't get proper medical care, proper food. A lot of these elephants become blind while in service, and they continue to be used as these work horses.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Really bad.
Again, when I was a kid, around 7, ran away from home and made my way down to a place that was called Pacific Ocean Park. It was a huge, like a Coney Island. It was on the Santa Monica Pier, and it was a big amusement park. They were hoping it to be a Disneyland by the sea, but it still had that old Coney Island feeling. And there was an organ grinder with his monkey, and I was drawn to the monkey. But consequently, in my 2-day absence, big controversy. But in my 2-day absence, I slept overnight in the circus train with the organ grinder and the monkey. And because I befriended the monkey, and then the organ grinder is an Italian guy, classical, with a mustache.
And you're lucky he wasn't a child molester.
No, I wasn't a child molester.
Well, you're lucky.
But, you know, the monkey and I got into big arguments. about arguments, and he fed us fruit. We were fighting over the fruit. And we got into big arguments. What happened was he wanted dimes, and the only thing I had in my pocket when I ran away were a few pennies. When I gave him a penny, slapped my hand. ultimately, in those 2 days, we became friends, and it was a sad parting because I, you know, had to get home. My Huckleberry days were over, but you know, there was a bond he had with the monkey. And the monkey, it was a different relationship.
Where it wasn't
abusive.
And
he wasn't abusive to the monkey. The monkey slept in a wagon, and there was hay for his bed. And he had to wear a costume with a little top cap and things like that. God, if I had stayed, I might have turned into a monkey. But nonetheless, it was sort of like the Pinocchio thing. It reminded me so much when I saw Pinocchio. Yeah, and when he was Geppetto, the Italian guy that took him into the circus and made him dance as a puppet, kind of a similar thing. Stromboli was his name. But, you know, the idea that we, you know, I don't know, we're getting on this topic. It's supposed to be a psychic hour.
Well,
anytime we have an opportunity to talk about the animals and the communication of animals, how we sometimes it's thrilling to do a reading where someone is just involved in animal spirit, and we get to bring animal spirits into the reading, wolves and different wild animals that become part of the reading itself. And the reading sometimes takes on mystifying qualities. I did a reading with one woman, it was years ago, and we both saw on the wall, a white wall, the shadow of a wolf, and it was moving, like a living shadow, like a theater. And we both identified with the wolf and understood that energy, and when we brought the energy in from the spirit world, we did see those astral creatures. I believe a lot of primitive people a lot of natives and Indians and cave dwelling people did experience the mystical astral realm. Now that might have been induced by some hallucinogenic they found in the forest, a mushroom or something. But what they would do, and I've mentioned this before on the shows, is they did those cave drawings, and then they would go in at night and light a fire, and they would have beyond hallucinogenics, so to speak. They go into a deep trance, and the shaman would narrate the drawing on the wall, and the drawing on the wall would move. So there would be the hunt, the hunters, and the animals would actually move and ripple on the wall, and it became our first living theater.
Did they sell popcorn?
No, they didn't.
Not in those days.
They just sold corn.
Just corn.
Just corn.
Corn kernels.
Corn kernels.
Dried
kernels. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we have a caller that we're going to bring on right now. It's Camille, 713-76, I think. Yeah. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. How are you guys today?
Doing all right. How are you, Camille?
Good. I'm good. Thank you.
Great.
Yeah, just...
What's going on?
Okay. I'm calling. Yes. Any insights you can give about my daughter? Can I give her information?
Yeah.
Okay. December 7th, 2011.
Interesting. That's interesting. Okay. 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Okay. So she's going to have a change when she's 14 years old. She's a 14-5. It's her karmic number. What's your question?
Very, very independent, high-spirited, high-energy. Can have like little bouts of like, you know, distemper, I guess. Doesn't, you know, she's so, her thoughts go so fast. And she's just not always easy to manage her own emotions. She's 8 years old, almost nine, so a lot of emotional immaturity. But very passionate about so many things, and sometimes it's almost hard to live with. So what do I need to know to help about her own personality?
What do you mean hard to live with? You feel overwhelmed by her?
Yes.
Overwhelmed.
Sometimes I feel overwhelmed, and I just say, okay, I got to take a moment and just... alone time, you know, I'm going to sit in my room and take a time out. You sit in your corner and have a time out because it's just insane. But very loving, very affectionate. Yes, love, attention, nurturing, which I give.
But you're also a single mother, so that's extra pressure on you because you're doing 100% of a job that you should be a 50-50 partnership with a mate. So you're taking
Correct.
On that responsibility. Does she have a relationship with her father?
No.
Okay. So that's, yeah. Well, you wanted to say something, obviously.
Well, you know, your months and days are not that far apart.
You mean the
reverse
order. Yeah.
713, and then you going backwards, 721. Your months together, your master numbers together become a 12, which is the month of your daughter's birth. The reason you're having, well, number one, let me jump forward. I think your daughter is going to go into journalism or writing. There's going to be some part of her. She's going to become at least interested in that and go through a phase of that as she gets older.
Nice.
So there could be a desk. If she's reading now, does she read? Is she a good reader?
No, she's just learning at 8. She is just getting there. Yeah.
Now, if you're an involved mother, help her to understand the meaning behind the stories that she reads, and let her read simple stories first, things that she can handle.
What caused the delay? In because that's 8, because she's going to be 9, right? Wait.
Yeah. Well, you know, we were living in Alameda, and I think she didn't start really speaking until she was little, just 3. And the doctor was a little concerned. And right as the doctor made that statement, that same weekend, she started talking. And I read her all these books all the time from 3 until 5. I read to her so many books. And then something happened. We lost our home in Alameda. And everything had to go into storage. And then we ultimately made a move to Oregon. And I got her into school, but we never reestablished that reading schedule. There were so many other stimulations, but she's in school, she's in second grade, and she just got, tomorrow we will find out the results of a assessment that they did for any possible learning disabilities. So we don't have those results yet. We'll get them tomorrow.
She's a little behind. I mean, second grade is usually 7 years old, and she's 8, but going to be 9.
Well, with a late birthday too, they wouldn't allow her to start kindergarten because her birthday fell after a certain date.
Right.
So
her kindergarten.
So really, she could be, had she not repeated first grade, she would be in third grade right now. But because she repeated first grade, she's in
right.
second
okay.
grade. So here's one year.
Here's your notes, Camille, for the future. When she's 14, she's going to be making a major change. That might be when she might start to take writing seriously. That's number one.
Mm.
Number two, I didn't speak English really. I didn't talk really till I was 7 or 8. And my tongue's not able to form, so I developed my own language. I was extremely quiet, I read a lot, and they thought perhaps I even had a brain tumor. They didn't know what was wrong with me. Yeah, but I was an extraordinary weird kid anyway. So I wouldn't worry about her backward learning schedule right now. If I were you, I'd give the message. Read to her and help her understand the symbolisms. Help her to represent the pictures, what they mean to her. Expand her mind. If there's a blue balloon, say, well, if there's a blue balloon in the story, let her pertain it to the story, and then let her think about what blue balloons mean to her. Become an avid reader for her to help her understand the depth of stories and pictures.
Right.
And when you get to be, she's 14, she's going to probably in junior high want to go into journalism, and she'll want to write, maybe for the paper, maybe for something else, however they do it in this day and age. But I think she's going to become a writer. Her karmic number is 14, but 721 or 127 is a 1, and 211 is a 4, so she matches her higher numbers. And she will go through some trouble. You know,
meaning her higher numbers match her karmic number,
yeah,
which is not always the case.
Not always the case.
But additionally, so her master number is 5, which is the 5th chakra, the vocal chakra. Often musicians, writers are involved in that type of work. And the karma 1-4, it's broken up. So that could be why she's having these challenges in the realm of being at her grade level in terms of her reading.
Yeah.
But the 5 is, you know, the 5 master number is the guiding
Be careful, you know, be careful how she's labeled or diagnosed. You focus
right.
on the storytelling. And well, no matter what you hear, I wouldn't bother. I mean, okay,
she
you
also has
what the doctors say and do as they say.
Yeah,
but,
see what they say.
But from that, don't stop. Go deep into storytelling. Let her go and pick out books and say, and let her put her name on it and say, this is your book. And you help to make it a bigger story. You add to it if you want. When we're reading a story, you add what you want to do. And if she gets inspired and starts adding to the storyline on any given page, write that down on the book so she could see her ideas on the printed page. If you still work with books today, I hope you do.
Oh,
but
yeah,
if it is,
we got a lot of them.
Well, then go back there, Camille.
The other thing is she's got her 12-7. There's a difference of 5 between 2 and 7. So that could also account for that, you know, that her master number is tucked between that 2 and 7. So at the age of 14, hopefully these problems will be resolved and she'll be on her way to having a career, a possible career in writing. Which is
you got to steer toward that way. You know, she doesn't have a father figure. She's going through an emotional territory that an adult should be going through, not a child. You know, she's not an older soul. And you know what you've got to do is let her choose an angel that she loves. Give her a variety of angels that she can identify with and let her choose the angel that she can talk to whenever she wants.
Interesting.
And then you can also buy little trinkets of angels. I think, what's your daughter's name?
Camille.
I call her Belle.
What am I saying?
What is it?
I call her Belle. Belle with an E.
Belle with an E?
Yes.
Oh, like in Beauty and the Beast?
Is that's her name?
Yeah, that's her nickname. Her real name is Cybele, C-Y-B-E-L-A.
Did she like that cartoon, Beauty and the Beast?
Oh, she loves it. She collects little things from that movie.
Yeah, I thought so. Well, you know, again, it's an old fairy tale. And so read her the fairy tales.
Well, you know, Camille is also talking about feeling like she's overextended because she has so much, responsibility running the household and being a parent. So there's got to be maybe, I wonder if there are some groups that, I mean, it's now so hard with everything going on, but groups, reading groups that, or something at the library.
What you do... Camille will give her time to preoccupy herself.
Yeah, obviously.
So you can do other things.
Yeah.
And give her a little assignment. Let her come up with her own assignment. Say to her, what assignment do you want to give yourself today? Well, I want to write a story. Well, I want to go on my recorder and talk and tell a story. And you go, that's a good idea. Why don't you recite a story and then we'll play it tonight. And we'll listen to it. And you could dim the lights and listen to it like it's a movie. You know, there's different things you can do. If you put in a half hour, it's going to save you 3 hours. You know,
that makes sense. Okay.
If she collects a lot of things from Beauty and the Beast, she fantasizes. Children have to escape. And she's probably, the world is too much for her, the real world. So when they start to escape and they go into their little worlds and enhance her with that. Tell her stories that she can make up about herself and the fairy tales. You know, things like this is what I would say to you.
Any questions?
Well, let me think. Like, she's very, it's the issue is reading and writing and math, but she loves math. She loves science. She's active and energetic and social, and she's very high performing in all these other areas, you know. So it's just the reading and the writing. So we'll find out something tomorrow. And what I've been told is, okay, you have to advocate for your child. So if you get something that you don't agree with, you don't have to agree with it. You can challenge it. You know, I totally understand.
Okay, so here's Linda. I get it, Camille. I get it. She's having.
Yeah.
What you do is let her tell a story, and then let's say in her story she says a certain word like beautiful. Then what you do is you write down three words. One of them is beautiful. The other one might be pretty. The other one might be, sunrise. And let her pick out the word that matches her voice.
You matches the word.
The word like, beautiful.
Right.
Let her multiply.
Start to identify.
Because if she can narrate a story, which I'm sure she's talkative, if she can narrate
a
story.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah. So let her narrate a little story, and then you pull out of that a special word, write it down, surround it with two other words on any kind of sequence, and then let her pick out which word that is identical to the word she said. You have to, you have to own language.
Yeah.
This is a way to teach her, I'm telling you. It's a creative way to teach. There might be other methods in terms of vowels and letters and things, but she has to be put into the story.
Okay. I see. I see. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Camille. You're welcome. And I still think, you know, check into programs at your library where there could be story time hour and where kids have a opportunity to participate and give feedback.
Right.
Because you want to involve her in more activities that involve that surround reading, storytelling, that so it inspires her to want to learn more and create her own dialogue story.
Well, that's a great idea.
Yeah. So check
that's
into your library,
idea.
The library for that.
Okay. Yeah, I'll check into it. Well, that makes sense. That's very insightful.
And that gives you time too. If she has a program that she can go to, that gives you time. I don't know if it would coincide with your work schedule or if it would actually give you a little bit of extra alone time because it's an after school program. I'm not sure what your hours are, but if it helps
right now,
get a little time off.
Right now, I've been volunteering in the secretary's office of her school,
mm-hmm.
and they were trying to see if they could bring it up to the board and possibly monetize the position, but there's been a lot of difficulty and delay there. So I'm...
Is that school the red brick, the big red brick building off of Highway 101?
No, it's a different one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a different one. So I might have to reconsider my current arrangement. That's okay. That's okay.
What do you mean, reconsider your current arrangement as far as volunteering or as far as your job that
yes.
you're currently in?
Yes, as far as volunteering.
Yeah.
There are other things that I could very easily devote time to and monetize and get that. So that's something to consider within the next few days.
Okay. Well, let us know. Keep us posted.
I sure will. Thank you so much, guys.
You're welcome. Camille,
yeah.
Have a good day.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Good luck. I was very verbal when I was, math and science were not my strong suits. I mean, I did well in school when I was young. I scored very high on standardized tests, but I was reading by the time I was four years old. So it was.
Yeah.
And I was, and I read, you know, fairly advanced books at a young age, and I was a voracious reader.
I lived in Westchester, in Los Angeles, Westchester. And when I was about maybe six years old, I'd go to the public library and go into the adult section and pick out the Three Musketeers, the full text, and Robinson Crusoe. I didn't go to the children's section, I went to the adult section. And the children's librarian, who was just a horrible person, would capture me over there and scold me for going to the adult section. She demanded that I go into the rules section. But I was reading these books, you know, that's what I wanted to check out. But it wasn't, back in those days, it was just, I was just too controversial, too dramatic for a kid to be in the adult section.
Did you just have free reign to just, like, go to the library on your own at 6 years old?
I, for some reason, my parents allowed me to take off.
I can't imagine.
I went to the canyon. It was the Howard Hughes Airport. But I went to the canyons by Loyola University, and I would play in the canyons where there were caves and deep cliffs. There were old railroad tracks, and I remember hobos, and there were polywog ponds. So I was really given free rein. And sometimes I wouldn't come home till 8, 9 when it was dark. I don't know. My parents had a strange jurisdiction over me in terms of the lack of watching over me in that conception. One time I went and visited my grandmother on my father's side, and I was gone for about 8 hours. I went on a hike. She called the police that I was missing. She never heard of such a thing that a kid would be out on his own. I was about 8. But no, I did do those things. Walk miles away, or ride my bike.
Not.
So I just was adventuresome in that regard.
I would have never been allowed to do that. Plus, I was so small as a child. I mean, I was very small for my age.
I was
the smallest person in my class.
I was fairly small. I wasn't that small.
I was always the smallest person.
But
I mean, as a female, obviously, I wouldn't have those. I just didn't have that free reign. Now, when I was older, when I was sixth grade, I took a city bus to school, and so I would get dropped off at the library. 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and I would go into the library, and then that was where I had my free reign. But it was later.
Yeah.
I would check out a stack of books and read them all in the weekend.
You were an avid reader.
I would
take the bus around that time too, but I started hitchhiking when I was around 11 or 12.
I mean, I hated taking the bus. Oh, God. I hated it, but
yeah. So it was, you know, it was a different time then. I mean, of course, I had my misadventures hitchhiking. There were people who were, you know, really nice people, but I always wiggled out of its situations and I was never abused or anything. But they were threatening times. But I would, you know, if I wanted to go to the beach, and I'd either walk 7 miles or ride my bike, or I would hitchhike, and back then, around that age, I think I was, you know, avid body surfer. But it doesn't, you know, the idea that we're talking about how children, where children's minds are at today, and which compelled me to actually start studying child psychology to get a degree in it. But the idea that, to me, it's one of the vast resources of therapy is imagination. I think the imaginary element of being a child is extraordinary. And the more we can have adult influences that are clean and direct, not abusive, can enhance a child's life tremendously in that regard. But when, you know, we were talking about animal spirits.
That's right.
In our readings and how the animal spirits come into play. And I do believe that vegetarians have a closer link. I'm not saying that there are meat eaters that have a close link to the animal kingdom. A lot of Native American Indians are meat eaters, and they regard the animal as a spirit and things like this, and they have great conversations and connections with them. And there are several cults and societies and tribal energies that deal with animals and meat. So we're not just saying that only non-meat eaters can connect to animals. But I think that there is a certain communication that goes on, because what animals do, whether they're in the physical world or the spiritual world, is they can read a person's vibration. They can read a person's diet. It's just like, crudely speaking, when dogs smell each other, they're reading their diet. They're reading whether they're aristocrats or just scrap eaters off the street. This is how they identify and how they get the idea of what composes an animal's energy. Well, when an animal, or even therefore anything, an insect even, looks at you or connects to you, there's a communication that goes on that I think is really special.
Well, yeah, and aside from the fact that, you know, there is a verbal communication. If I'm saving an insect, I talk to the insect. It's not only on a psychic level where there's interaction, connection.
Yeah, we had a connection with a dragonfly that used to come by and visit us. And he would tell us stories. And while he's telling us a story, he'd fly off and capture an insect and come back chewing it while he's still telling the story. He'd come right back to us. Look us, his compound eyes were staring at us. They have very good eyesight. And he would alight on us. He was a really, really a special dragonfly. They're special. Very voracious eaters, carnivorous. But they are wonderful, amazing creatures. Again, there are many reasons to save honeybees. Our honeybees are rapidly diminishing in their colonies, but there are many reasons to save a honeybee. Now, we save honeybees, and they swear to God, they wave to us. They know they're being saved. People may say that's ridiculous. And honeybees have compounded eyes, so it's hard for them to make the pattern of a human being out. But they do recognize color. They do recognize energy. And I think when we get into the depth of a deeper conversation, beekeepers might attest to this. There is a communication that goes on. You can't relate it to human terms of communication. You have to get into the bee's level of communication. But a bee is a very sophisticated living thing. When they come back to the hive, they do a bee dance. And that bee dance will direct the other bees exactly to where a bountiful flowers are, where there's pollen. And they go and they actually know exactly from this communication, this sophisticated dance, that the bee comes back and wiggles around and twirls around exactly how to go to the location where there is pollen, flowers, and blossoms. So, you know, the idea is, I think to some respect, we're all scavengers. We're trying to gather information from the world. And psychics are somewhat scavengers because we, as psychics, we go out into the astral realm, into the physical realm, and we scavenge. We look for information. We look for certain spirits and guides, angels, information, vibration, energy sources that, and we come back to our living space with information. supposedly psychics and mystics were so valuable to a believing population, human population, and that information should be direct. Now, in our reading with Camille, that was just an information-based reading. There were no spirits involved or predictions or...
No, I mean, you were reading off a code, essentially.
Yeah.
Reading off a code of her master, karmic number, master number.
And again, as we've stated in our book, that code is a living movement of information. It vibrates constantly, it moves, and it has a certain direction that is not typical of just its standard-based alignment.
Right. So the interesting thing about Camille's daughter, Belle, is that she's a 14-5, which is, again, it involves the vocal chakra. And so if we were analyzing that code based on just a fixed meaning, you know, we would say, oh, well, Belle is, she must be a great reader, a storyteller, and she's going to be doing this in her future. Whereas in this case, there's difficulty right now as she's going through her karmic years in the area of reading and writing. But ultimately, in her case, probably going to be doing something in journalism or writing on some level when she gets older. But, you know, and she's got that 5 between the 2-7.
Well, there is you know, numerical formations in classical numerology, but basically numerology profiles a number. It profiles
right,
the number, and it's limited. It does do some configuration sometimes when you get into more classical numerology. But we don't just profile a number. That's so limiting. It's just absolutely stereotyping and limiting and evading what is the full value and truth of what a whole system of numbers means.
Right. I mean, and, you know, the thing is that, you know, her 1-2 suggests that she's going to have some difficulties in her earlier years. But another person, and when she's got an 11 also in her year, some difficulties there. But another individual that's a 14-5 could have a totally different read. I mean, a 14-5,
yeah.
It's a completely different read.
Yeah, living according to, you know, how long one's stuck on one number, whatever. Now, her being a 14-5, Camille's year, total year, comes to 14. So there's a similar linkage.
Well, yeah, and Camille's
to her daughter, yeah. Belle's master number, and it's 14 equals 5. And Camille being born in 1976, which is 13 plus 1, 14 equals 5.
Right. Not only that, the 713 is corresponds to the 11 in Camille's year.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm
master,
sorry, in Belle's year.
The master numbers
doing
together
that
become actually Belle's month.
12.
So there's, when you get into numerology.
And 7 is, sorry, one more thing. 7 is Camille's month, and it's Belle's. It's
yeah.
Belle's
and
day.
And those 2-7s are 14. So we're
back to 14. Yeah.
So what we have done in our book is we have moved deeper into the linkage between past lives in a numerical level of thinking. That there is a direct, you could say that Camille gave birth to Belle, and so they have that connection. And they can say, oh, we're soulmates. But what we've done in numerology is we've given a basis in mathematical equations and definitions for that. Now, of course, we've surrounded that under our own classical definition and guidelines as to how our theme of numerology works. But it's like anything. I've talked to people who were professors and probability. And physics, These were people with PhDs in these areas, and demonstrated to them our the theory that was devised in terms of our conception of numerology. And they, first it was nonsense, but as they began to see uniformly how these numbers connected, pertaining to each person's life, it became a facet of information for them that was quite intriguing. The least of which it was very intriguing. It drew their attention to the idea that there was a code and a birth date that pertains to one's living life patterns. We, Chris and I, have gone further. We've separated the birth dates into categories. We've demonstrated what movement is in the birth date, how the numbers can be interchangeable, and how they reflect certain aspects of a person's body, mind, and soul.
Right, and you know the different numbers, the different levels within each individual number, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
That's why we've spent, what, 8, 10 years?
We haven't spent that long. I think we started the book in 2014.
Oh, we spent six years. We saw the book in 2014?
Six, five, I don't know.
Well, then
2014 or 15.
Now 6 years on this book.
Yeah, well.
People say, well, you know, when are you going to get it done? People have asked us.
Yeah,
when
are we going to get it done?
But the truth of the matter is,
it's not a rush project. No,
and we're trying to put it all. I'm not going to do another book after this. This is it for me.
Oh, my God, no.
But I'm trying to see when we started.
It was in February.
We started
of 2014.
February.
February
26th.
I know when it is. Yeah.
So we started at February 26, 2014, which brings us to just about 6.5 years.
Oh, wait a second. 7 years. Wait. No.
About 6.5.
Six and two thirds. It'll be 7 in February.
Yeah.
7 years in February, and we're still working on it. Okay. Well, we are back on the air on Wednesday. Wednesday at 9 a.m. We hope that you join us then, and we will speak with you then.